Yes, actually, I would like to just give a few moments to just ask you and myself, what is the intention with this meeting? What is it that we actually want to bring out or gift, or why are we doing this? Why are you doing this?
For me, I've kind of just rediscovered embodiment. And I have been, I'm noticing that I've been suppressing my instinct, my intuition for a really long time in favor of the brain, the mind, or what I perceive to be the mind, the small part of the mind that I was able to perceive as the mind. And so I think the topic in general is something that's very much alive in me right now. And I also have this very sort of deep curiosity about you from our first conversation. Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious to find out more. And if, to the extent that words can help or spark curiosity, that's what I'm hoping to do with the podcast. That it'd be a conversation, and it'll be a glimpse that somebody could maybe hook someone else. So those would be my hopes and dreams around this conversation. What about for you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your sharing. My first thing is to serve. Serve the meeting between us, and to explore together. In that exploration, also bring in inspiration for ourselves, but also for our listeners. So I'm also coming here with an open mind and no agenda, and trust that the environment and the field will guide us, and absolutely the embodiment of us will guide us to more clarity and more curiosity about what this embodiment can be and how we can deepen that even more. But serve the intelligence of the body mind with a little bit more emphasis on the body today. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, I should do my little sort of intro thing. That's fun. So welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. I am today sitting with Rosario. And help me with your last name.
Rojas. Rosario Rojas.
Rojas. Yes, I figured. Rosario Rojas. And this is another part of the special little series that I've been doing on stories in general. And today we might also circle a little bit around money and wealth in preparation for this micro, World of Wisdom micro gathering that we'll be hosting in September, where Rosario is, luckily for us, has agreed to be one of the facilitators. So it's very, very exciting to have you here, Rosario Rojas. What I would like to invite you to do, because I'm not even going to try to introduce you in my words, but rather I would let you do that with the frame of just a very, very open question. Who are you, Rosario?
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for this beautiful meeting. That's a very good question. Who am I? So Yes. That's a question that I actually are asking myself every day. But to be more specific, normally, today I work with Mindful Incorporation to serve them and to support them in to create an environment where people can thrive. And also create what I call high performance team. And it's more about also having the trust and safety to be open, to be creative, and to have a lot of fun. And it could also be fun to, at times, meet some challenging things within yourself or within the group. And I have these beautiful tools, we can say, that mindfulness are gifting our society now, and tools that are easy to learn, not always so easy to apply, but very easy to learn. And in that, I have this love for the body. And one of the key things in the method of mindfulness is body scan and also movements. And all of those has the body as its core. You can add other things on that, and we're going to talk about that later. And I also have a degree as a physiotherapist, and also I'm a specialist in psychodynamic physiotherapy, where you involve the whole system, not just the body, also the emotions, the thoughts, and very important, your environment. What kind of environment are you in, as well in your home, as well as in your working place? So, and I also started my career as a dancer, as a professional dancer. So I think my love for the body as this beautiful vehicle and tool and the intelligence of the body started somewhere there. So yeah, that's a short introduction. I'm also a mother. I'm also a human being. And I'm very, very curious. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a wonderful introduction. Yeah, so the topic of today is going to be circling around the body. And for me, I've really had a journey into it lately, into my body, into her, I think. And it's been quite profound, and in little nooks and corners that I'm rediscovering that I'd forgotten that I had, I'm finding all this sort of joy and flow and power. And it's really crazy, the things that I seem to have forgotten over the years. And so one of the curiosities that I have, and maybe it might be a good place to start, is kind of where do you see the body today in our society, in the work that you do? Where is the body? What's the standing of the body, so to say? I don't know if you understand my question, but...
Well, I answer as I understand it when you ask that question. And the first pictures that comes to me is that there are very much heads walking around in our society. So very little the rest of the body, but a lot of heads. I don't know the term in English, but in Swedish is huvudfoting. It's when you are a child, you look at your development, and around 3-4, I think it is, you should have painted this picture with a head and a body. And that body is very, very thin. It's just one line. If you're lucky, they have some legs on arms as well, but it's a big head. And I think our society actually has stopped much of our development. So it's very much very full and very much attention of the head and thoughts and intelligence, intellectual intelligence. And we have lost a little bit the deeper and the more fully possibility with embodiment.
That resonates strongly with my experience as well. And why do you think that is?
I think I don't know when, but we have, and it was good. It's part of the development, I think, that we have put so much trust and foundation in the intellectual intelligence. And all, it's a little bit changing now, but much of the times in school is all about the head and not so much about how the body actually learns. And the body learns more by doing and by also allowing you to make mistakes. That's the best way that the brain actually learns. And some of them, not all the science are agreed about this, but some of science says that the first assignment, you can say, that the brain had was to coordinate movements. So that intelligence lies really, really back in the old brain. And if we can use that when we learn more other things, when that part of the brain are awake, it actually awakes more of the whole brain. So you get the whole brain learning and whole brain integration. And I think that that is actually an easier way to learn. So I think maybe that's going to change now when science are seeing this more and more, and especially our neuroscience have found that maybe we haven't used the whole capacity about how we can learn and how we can develop our body and brains in how the education systems has been working there the last years.
So interesting how, so I listened to a couple of thinkers and scientists that also have an indigenous background, and there were some recent research on memory and memorization techniques, and so where they were comparing something that would remind you of, like, you know, walking a song line, or like this sort of type of physical memory techniques that are very much present in some of the indigenous cultures, which has to do with movement, and which has to do with place, and which has to do with body. And they were also comparing it to this the memory palace. I don't know if you're familiar with, but the all of the memory masters now, the people that are remembering, you know, thousands of numbers of pi, they have, you know, a route that they built, and then they walk through this place and they retrieve the numbers. And they were seeing that when you connect it to place, memory, and when you connect it to, yeah, place and body, then there's a much greater potential for memory and for learning, and learning in sequence, and a number of things. So it's funny what we need to forget to rediscover, in a sense, and how that loops around. There's no question in there. It's just a reflection.
So it's really funny that we had to rediscover what we already actually know and what we already has like a natural way of being. So it's not so natural for children to sit at such an early age, to sit in front of a desk and just listening to a teacher or somebody that knows the right answer, instead of being out there and actually explore what the answer could be. And maybe there are not just one right answer. Maybe there are many more perspectives to consider if you are an explorer.
That's also interesting, this reduction to finding the right answer. And even in what you were saying already, it's like some of the scientists don't agree that, you know, this is the way that it is. it has an implication for the scientific method. I mean, it seems like we've forgotten, we've made science into a thing rather than an unfolding or a process of discovery, which is, at least that's how I understand it, fundamentally.
I think we need to be a little bit humble, knowing that what we say that we know today will be rewritten in the future, as we have been rewritten the past. So I think that to really have that perspective that we do our best, but the more we know, the more we also understand that how little we know.
Something else that dropped into my head when you were answering the question of sort of embodiment and where the body sits in society. I was wondering if, just playing with the thought of if we see the human society as an organism as well, that is also developing. I wonder if it has to do with the fact that we are, our age, our collective age, if you will, is at the age where we are drawing still these head-foot people, the huvudfotingar. Maybe that's an indication for something. But I don't know.
Yes. And I also think we have misunderstood a little bit of religion.
Mm.
So then the body has been something bad and something sometimes even filthy. So I think we also have to reclaim that was a totally misunderstanding about this intelligence and the beauty of bodies, and that this is a beautiful tool that we can use in this existence. And it's a beautiful tool for creation and also creation to well-being. So it's that beautiful movement from an idea and a longing or a passion for something out to the hands that actually can manifest. And you have it in the world, manifest. It comes from the word mano, that means hands. So that's how you actually make things come to fruition in this reality. And it's the body that has the last step in the creation, the manifestation. And even if you don't work with hands yourself, somebody has to put their hands in the idea to actually create it. So the body is very important in that sense to come to that last step. So it doesn't just stay as an idea or a vision. You also have the strength and the courage, and that's you also have to go through the heart, the core, the curve, to actually create and dare to create your dream, your vision.
Where it's so basic in a way, but there's also this what you are pointing towards now, the way that I hear it, is that the body is essential in some way. And yet the story that I've been fed is that it's primitive. You know, it's to be suppressed or dominated. We push through with our minds. We follow the ideas and all the research about sort of grit and motivation, and you push through no matter what. And where does that, how did it come to be?
I don't know how. I just know what has happened to the society right now. And I think we have a beautiful, beautiful challenge right now to elevate ourselves from the body as the animal level and the biological level. And for that, we need to heighten our awareness and heighten our level of consciousness so we can not suppress, but elevate us from the lower realms of the body, because they exist, but they are there for a purpose and an intelligence. And you have to first harness that purpose and intelligence. Or if it's not a purpose, it might be a need. And when that is fed and harnessed, then you go to the next level. But if you bypass that, then you can't use the foundation that this beautiful body really is and heighten it to something else. So yes, we have bodies, but we ain't our bodies. So we have them, we borrow them for a couple of years, being in this realm of existence.
Ah, that's funny. I heard you I was thinking of that whole idea that we are, we're not human beings, we're human becomings, or that there's this movement implied in how we can unfold as humans, and that we maybe we are also our bodies. So we are these biological beings for a time, if you will. And how, like, on the societal level, is it possible to bring back the body in? Like, is there a way to do that? Introducing the body to people that are kind of, I mean, if you are, you know, how do we wake it up? How do we remember
it? It's here. You can't do anything about it. It's here. The question is, are you aware of it? Do you use its potential? Because the body's going to speak. It's going to speak about your suppression. It's going to speak about the non-alignment in it. It's going to speak of its joy. It's going to speak of its abundance. So it's speaking. And it's communicating all the time. So the question is more, do you use and consciously take part of that creation or not?
And so that also kind of implies why mindfulness is so important in the work of getting to know our bodies or connecting with our bodies, I guess.
The body has this beautiful, beautiful key that are so connected with what we call mindfulness. And it's that the body is always, always here and now. So it's a door into the present moment. So even if you think about yesterday or the past, and you should actually do that, there's this misconception that if you are mindful, you should never go back or forward in time. That's not correct. It's just that you move the mind consciously. So when I move my mind consciously back in time, the body is experiencing it as it's happening right now. And the same thing, if I move my mind into the tomorrow or into the future, the body experience it as it's happening right now. So the body doesn't have any sense of linear time. And sometimes the body can be a little bit misinterpreted. So I used to say that the energy and what you feel is always, always 100% correct. Your interpretation of it might not be correct always. So it's a really beautiful art, actually, to master that discernment, to differentiate. Is the body talking about here and now in this present moment, or is the body now remembering something from the past or thought about the future?
And
I love that pause.
Yeah.
Could you That was a beautiful pause to integrate whatever you perceived into your body, and my body followed.
There is something about slowness for me, which allows me to kind of do that integration, letting things land and settle.
So can you just say something about what happened, or what could you actually perceive in that pause?
It's as if the words had time to pass through my brain and find a deeper resonance. And so, and that resonance is somewhere in the heart, stomach region for me.
Beautiful. So it's a beautiful example of what embodiment could be. And if we can listen, for example, not just with our ears, what if every little cell in the body had ears? So it's a full body experience to listen to another person, or maybe even listen to this podcast.
Yeah, and I've also discovered the perspective, which has been a way into it for me, that whatever my brain is working on or thinking or whatever it's, you know, whatever it's doing, it's always working off of signals from the body, because it's this poor little thing is suspended in my skull, you know, and it has no senses of its own, so it has to borrow. And not that it's separate, I don't really believe in that separateness, but for me it's a useful thought figure, at least, to remember that the sensing and the physical reaction is also there, and it's at least as real, and maybe as you are pointing towards, maybe even more so, even more real.
You can pick up a lot of information through that listening, or that sensitivity to what you actually perceive. So you get richer about the information you gather from the outside. But it also goes the other way. You get richer and more clear about your message. Or sometimes maybe mere more confused, because your message is not aligned. It's not, maybe you're a contradicting yourself, what you are saying with your words and mind, and what your body language actually are sending.
I also wanted to, something that popped up earlier that I wanted to kind of reconnect to, but just for my own curiosity, I'm thinking two things. I'm thinking both this reliving of, like when the body responds to something that isn't there at the moment, a threat maybe. I'm just wondering if that, I mean, it's just as, like you said, I thought it was beautifully put. I just wanted to underline that it's just as real for me, for my organism, as if it had been there. I guess the example of the tiger is, you know, it's not so relevant to us anymore. But that fear response is just as real, and the response, and therefore our mind kinds of, our minds, perhaps they have to respond to that. Of course, they have to do something. In relation to that response. I'm just wondering, because it arcs into me, into this, what some people call that we have a mental health epidemic, or this that we're so stressed and so burnt out and so worn down in many cases. Is it that simple that we've forgotten to listen to our bodies? Or I'm sure there's more to it, but nonetheless.
Yeah, but it's part of it. It's part of it. I have met a lot of people that you could say have been burned out or run into that wall. And none of them have not had their body talking to them, screaming at them loudly. But they haven't paid attention because they thought other things was more important. And then there is an intelligence that actually sits in the body, that if you don't listen, if you don't act on what the body are telling you, you are actually trying to kill yourself. So the intelligence in the body is to make sure that you survive. So that's why the body pulled the rug under your feet. And one day you can't do what you thought you could do. It's like an alarm system that the body has, because if you push yourself further, you will damage some or many of your organs. And that is not repairable. If you lost your temper, if you lost some of your memory, if you have pain in the body, for that intelligence, they know that we can repair that later. So it might take time, but we can, it's repairable. But the organs, no. So they have to protect you from damage yourself. So it's a beautiful intelligence, and it's because the body works that we got burned out, that we run into the wall. It's our not listening and that we don't understand the message that unfortunately makes us go so far instead of take a pause before we get so sick, actually. But it's not life-threatened. When it becomes life-threatened, the body kicks in. So I want to say to all of you that listening here that it's not that you are damaged or there's something wrong with you if you have gone through this. It's actually a beautiful way that your body actually works. And it wants to protect you. Not in the way that you want, but in the way that actually works.
That's beautiful. And it kind of, at least in my mind, it brings me naturally to think about the topic that we have chosen for these work sessions on money and wealth that you so graciously also suggested that we would introduce as the concept of into the title. So it's not just money, which can be, I don't know, for me, it holds more tension. And I don't know how that is resonating. But is that, because if we are in this moment and we just take it, as you are putting it, that we are not listening to our bodies for whatever reason, but it seems to me, at least in the group of people that I know, that reason very often is relating to this chasing after money and chasing after wealth. And also from my own journey, I know that I have that idea that I'm just going to do this thing that is hard and that is, you know, extractive from my body, and then I'm going to, then I will rest, then I will give back to the world, then I will, whatever it might be. I can see that also in our collective culture. But how does money and wealth, in your experience, sit in relation to the body and what we were just talking about?
You describe it so beautifully. If you connect what you just said, what we talked about before, that the body is always here and now. So if you think about wealth tomorrow, then wealth will show up tomorrow. And tomorrow never comes. Tomorrow is just a thought. We can experience tomorrow in the present moment. So when we start to listen to ourselves and to the body, because that is the topic today. As you all understand, it's broader than this, but it's a beautiful way to actually start with the body. It's also to start with wealth or well-being in the body. So how about have the feeling of whatever wealth are for you, to be able to harness that feeling, that sense right now, as it already is there. Because if you're thinking about it tomorrow, then there is a little bit of lack in your system. And to be in lack is a very stressful state. And in that stressful state, you can't really be able to access abundance and creativity, because that doesn't happen in a state of stress. That happens in a state of trust and safety. So you have to be aware of what state I'm actually creating my dreams in, or my vision in. Is it a state of lack? Then the body is so beautiful, it doesn't judge. So if it's lack that you want to harness, if lack is the thing you want to give energy, then the body says, okay, we will create lack for you if that is what you want, because it just wants to do what you want. And many of us do that unconsciously. We think about that we want to have wealth and well-being, but we feed ourselves and the nervous system and our bodies with lack and stress. So that is the command we give our systems to actually create from. So it creates it. And then we don't understand why this was not what I thought I created. No, maybe not what you thought, but what you fed your system with.
So to me, I've had a hard time relating to words of like lack and abundance. And so in my head, I keep replacing them with like adversity or a goal, even, you know, setting a goal is also that. Yeah, I just wanted to bring that in because those are words that I have had an easier time to relate to. It's just now that I can kind of, without any nervous system response, talk about the word abundance and not feel provoked by it. So it's been a very strong, like, conflicting thing in me. So I just wanted to bring that in.
Yes, so I would like to actually, when you say that, bring out a definition about abundance that I learned when I was in the Amazons with the indigenous people there, because I found that I had a totally wrong view of what abundance actually looks like before I met them. So abundance for them is that there are so plenty of something that you can take as much as you need, and there is still something left. But if you take more than you need, then you are sick and you actually need support and help. I thought that was so beautiful.
How do you see that in a Western context? Civilized, quote, in quotation marks, civilized context.
Yeah, I think we have been, we haven't seen that in that way. So we take as much as we can, as quickly as we can, and leave for someone else to get the consequences of our ripping off not just the planet, but that's part of it, but also each other, and sometimes yourself. So it's part of that sense of lack. If you have that stress and lack, you will, the nervous system will do that. But if it's not taken care of for the right reason, you will never be content because this lack is there all the time. Then it doesn't matter how much wealth you actually have. You will still run on that stress level of lack. And you will chase for something else and something else and something else. So I think that could be part of that sickness, that this distorted view of abundance has created in many levels in society. It's changing, but it's still there a lot in the Western culture. Yeah.
So, and in that definition, I mean, there's the, it fits also with the idea of a perfect sunrise being, you know, abundance, when you have just everything you need, you are, you know, well fed, or you might even be fasting and you're still, you know, you still have everything that you need. There's something, it's pulling me back to, I don't, but still, I'm so curious about, just in my own journey, I'm trying to piece out. And one of the things that I've been doing is to look at the utility of patterns, to try to understand and find compassion for them. I'm just imagining myself as like, let's say that one of the first human settlers or something like that. And, you know, you started farming the land, or discovering the technology of, you know, agriculture, if you will. but you needed to, but I don't know if that was ever, because I cannot understand that move between this indigenous way of being, the way of being, like where we spoke with the land and lived with the land, and we took, but we also, I don't know, do you have any, do you have a view of what started the sickness, sort of when we started hoarding, if you will, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, that's a very big question.
Mm-hmm.
but I think that some of that division is also a part that we haven't been talking so much about yet, and it's the existential part of being human. And in this urge to understand and to understand life and society, the body, the science made us a little bit to this mechanism and forgot about the mystery of life, the sacredness of life. And I think it's part also, we needed to do that for our development. So it's not a bad thing that happened. I think it's part of our journey. But now is also to go back and rediscover the wholeness, and that we are each other's environments. So yes, we are for sure individuals, but we share a field together. And I think that field is something that we have a little bit lost, to be in touch with that in our society. Also because we have maybe also moved from nature into the town. And things like that. So we don't have that closeness to nature. We don't know how things grow. We don't really know animals and so forth. So I think in that beautiful thing that technology has given us, and now it's time to integrate it a little bit more. And with the new science, for example, the quantum physics, we understand more of that as well. So they are coming together now, that the Newton's way of thinking exists in one level, but there are other ways where that view of the world doesn't, you can't count in that way any longer. There are other forces in play that we didn't know about before. So I think this is all part of our development. And
would you say something more about that field or that idea that we are each other's environment?
Mm-hmm. So how connected I am or not, you will feel that. Consciously or unconsciously, you will feel that. And I think a lot of us find it so uncomfortable to actually notice. It's a little bit uncomfortable to get so much information. So then we rather cut that off. In that sense that we, many of us, think that if I notice something, if I see something, I have to do something about it. So that responsibility becomes so, like, almost like a burden. So then it's better to not see, to not know, to not sense. But unconsciously, you are picking it all up. So in that sense, I'm going to bring my environment to our environment if we are co-workers or if we have some kind of relationship. So that's going to be part of our field. And people that comes to our field will add to that field with their systems. So it's actually a loving response to take care of my system so I don't bring too much garbage into our common space and vice versa. So that's part of what I do in the corporate mindfulness, to evoke that awareness that we are each other's environments.
You also said something that when we see something, we think that we have to do something. But just for fun, shouldn't we do something if we see something?
Yes. Yes. But you don't have to. Only if it really calls you.
And what I've discovered as well is that I've recently started coaching and taking a coaching training. And one of the things that I found there was that the do something, that something, there are a lot of somethings that are possible. And some of the somethings that are very minuscule are the ones that seem to mean the most to the other person.
And you can also in that use the embodiment when you have this urge to do something. Where does the doing come from? Does it come from stress? Does it come from some sort of distress and uncomfortability? Or does it come from caring? Does it come from, if you can use that word, love? So a lot of my clients, they confuse to be worried about somebody as to care about somebody. So what if you could care without being worried?
And that becomes even more, it's, I mean, it's in the, I just sort of, I got a ping from my system in the context of child raising.
Oh, I mean, that's the beautiful teaching about this concept. Yeah. Yes. So if you are worried, and I am a lot when it comes to especially the children, so calm you first, calm you down first, and then maybe you're a good support.
It's so interesting. I have, we had some friends over a day back or so, and they have two kids. One of them is a little boy, and he's very adventurous. So he likes to go exploring. Mm-hmm. And so he disappeared. He left and disappeared. And we were six grown-ups kind of running around the entire block looking for him. And like, you know, really in that way, looking for him. And what we didn't know was that he was playing hide and seek. And so he had gone and hid in the car. Gone and hid in the car. And to him, it was just a game. And when came back down the street and I saw him and he was sitting in between the front seats of the car, I saw his face and he was so excited that he had been found. And then the worry and the all of that of the parents, they showed that to him. And I'm not making any judgment. And I'm also saying that there was another way there. There was something else possible entirely in the response to that game that he was playing in his mind. It felt related, but it's me telling myself how hard it is again to separate those two things and to have care and hold love and separate out my, because the worry seems to be something that is me, and then the care and the love is something that is, it's also me, but it's, I'm trying to tease it apart. How does it relate?
It's that if we are too stressful in our system, then we shut down the frontal part of our brain, the more developed brain, that got shut off. And that's where we have the ability to notice, to be aware, to have a broader or bigger or higher perspective of things. That is not available when you are in stress. So it's just the old brain operating. And that brain is totally focused on whatever it sees as a threat or lack or stressful. So you don't have the capacity to look broader, to perceive it in the bigger picture. That's why it's so essential that you calm yourself down first, so you get access to your whole brain. For example, I don't in any regard blame that those parents, I have done the same mistakes. It's that I get so, in a way, so happy finding the child, if you take that example, but I forget to calm down that other system. And I put all the worry into that child in a way to calm down my system. So it becomes the child's responsibility to calm me down instead of me really expressing the joy, the love for this child and for the play. And after I really have given that love, say something about, do you know what? When you disappear like that and we didn't know that you were playing, this happening to me, but I'm so happy that you are found and all well. But next time, maybe we shouldn't need to be 6 or 8 adults out seeking for you, you know. But it's not easy, but because you want to have that relief yourself, but you should do that work before you actually meet the child, and not the child, your co-workers, I mean, or before you come home. How many hasn't had a stressful day, and then you come home and something is wrong with how they put their shoes in the hall or something else, and you get frustrated about that. And it has nothing to do with that, actually. It's something else that you need to take care of first. But when you come home, you feel safe. When you see the child, you feel safe. And then all that get unleashed in the sense of creating safety. But if you don't know that, you will act on the reactivity in your brain, in your body, instead of elevate yourself, as I said before, that we are more than just that. We have the capacity to do differently, but we don't have the capacity if the stress level is too high. And then we become it, as you said. We don't have that capacity to discern and to see more perspective. And we shouldn't if the tiger is there, you know. If the tiger is there, it should have all your attention. Or the threat is there. You shouldn't be thinking about other things at that time. So it's a very beautiful mechanism when it works, when it should work. But in our society, it has a tendency to be overreactive in situation that actually ain't life-threatening, but the system reacts as it was so stressful.
What you invoked in me now was that there's also an invitation to just see it as energies. They are not, like you said before, that the body gives you what you want, and so, and then it's for you to interpret it. So that strong emotion with the kid found or with the spoon that's in the wrong place, or it's either a wonderful act of release and self-care, and you can channel that into love, or you can channel that into something else entirely.
Yes, because if you just felt it as energy when you were out looking for that child, then it might not have been actually worry that you perceived. It was a heightened state of being alert, of being aware, to use all the senses to actually seek for that child. But we know stress, just the alertness, the presence. And then it's a beautiful energy to be with. But if you think that heightened state is equals being worried, then the mind creates beautiful loops and beautiful scenarios that feeds that sense of being worried instead of being heightened in your state. So you want to have that presence, you know, because it's response to activity, to go out and search.
It is. What came up to me was like, you think you just put a hole. I mean, these are the peak experiences that we are paying so much for and looking for. And then it's all about context. And I have this story that I've been telling a couple of people, but it's like the idea of physical distress, like what that is. And then just that perspectival shift of like, if you would, when you have been running like intervals up a steep hill, you know, if I would wake up in the middle of the night feeling like that in my body, I would call the doctor immediately. There would be a lot of fear response. But just because I'm tasting blood and I want to throw up and like the heart is racing and all that stuff, and I know what the reason is. I mean, it's a heightened state of, I can enjoy that pain and feeling and suffering in a sense. And what I caught from what you were just saying is that that's available to us in every, that arousal is maybe kind of the channeling of that old, if you will, but that part of the brain that was focused on hunting and survival and going. I mean, that might even be the state that one taps into when you are fully tracking an animal, or all those impossible things that you hear that other people can do that are trained in that modality. Maybe this is it.
Yeah, because you want to have that system with you, you know, the activity phase. You need that as well. We are designed to have, I don't want to call it stress because the name is so contaminated, or the word is so contaminated, but heightened activity levels. We want to have that, we want to use that, because there's a lot of potential and also intelligence in that. But we also want to use the other state that is more of relaxing, safety, and so forth. So it's the ability to dance between those states and to use the amount of energy that is actually needed for the task or the challenge.
I think that's a really nice point to start rounding off. I also just wanted to invite you to, is there anything that needs to be said right now, like around this topic that we failed to capture, or that I haven't brought in, or that we haven't brought in?
Well, we can be talking for hours. This is a topic that I really love to talk about. So, but I would like to say that the body is so, so generous. So you can make as many mistakes, but it will be there again for you. And it's always in the present, and you can start now. And you can start with small steps, and it doesn't need to be perfect. And the body will forgive you again and again and again. So I met a lot of people that see their body as their enemy. And I understand that when the body is in a lot of distress. So I don't want to override that. And it has to be taken care of before you can come to the next level. But I just want to say it's not your enemy. It just wants to say something in a way that's the only way for it to tell you that. So what if you could choose the interpretation of your enemy, knowing that it can't be your enemy? It maybe doesn't do what you thought or what you thought you wanted, but it's there to really, really support you.
Thank you. And if people want to reach out to you or find you online or work with you, how do they find you?
They can go to my website. I think that would be the easiest way to just find a little bit more about me. I also have contact details on the website, and that is my name, rosariorojas.se, as I live in Sweden, Stockholm.
Beautiful. We'll put the link in the episode as well, that people can find you.
That would be great. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for offering up your time, gifting your time. I'm really happy about this conversation. It was very useful to me. I'm also very excited about the September event and to see what wants to emerge there. So I'm really, really, really glad to have you as one of the facilitators for the Stories event. And we'll put the link to that as well, if you want to explore and come join us in the episode text.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and thank you so much for giving the time to speak about what I really love. And I also want to say that in the workshops, it's really going to be a workshop where you actually got practical tools and keys to use in your daily life. So it doesn't just become an idea, it becomes an experience that you immediately can apply.
Thank you for bringing that in. And thanks so much. So now go enjoy your vacation.
I will. Thank you for this beautiful break.
Thank you.
Thank you.